I'm Dr. Ciara Kelly, and you're very welcome to Beyond Expectations. So let's talk psoriasis. This is a four-part series where we're going to be trying to bring you important and practical information about living with psoriasis and indeed psoriatic arthritis. It is something that affects lots of people, and it is something that perhaps it is hard on occasion to get to see somebody in relation to it. So we're going to try and provide you out there with good, solid information. And for more on this today, we're going to talk about, in our first episode, newly diagnosed psoriasis. So if you're somebody who has just found out, and for more on this, we are joined today by Damien Broderick, who is a photographer and someone who has lived with psoriasis since he was 18. Dr. Paul Dalton, who is a clinical psychologist and head of the Department of Psychology in St. Vincent's University Hospital, and Professor Brian Kirby, who is a consultant dermatologist, again, at St. Vincent's University Hospital. I suppose it's fair to say, guys, that if you are somebody who has recently been diagnosed with psoriasis, it would feel like a real setback in terms of your health. But having said that, getting that diagnosis is probably the first step on the way to maybe getting control over the condition and maybe getting your life and your health, in fact, back on track. I might come to you first of all about that, Brian, because there's huge amounts of you know, new treatments, and indeed maybe the future has never looked as bright for people with psoriasis up until relatively recently. But for people who are tuned in, maybe in this exact position, newly diagnosed, can you just explain a little bit about what exactly psoriasis is and how it might present in somebody?
Psoriasis is a disease really of the immune system of the skin, and we're more familiar with immune systems now since COVID's been around, because we hear lots of chat from immunologists and clever scientists know more immunology than I do. But what's happening in the skin is that the immune system is overactive. So sometimes people come along and say, oh, there's something wrong with my immune system's down. It's actually overactive. And that causes the skin to turn over quicker. So the top layer of our skin, which is called the epidermis, turns over about once a month normally, and we exfoliate without any help from the cosmetic industry nicely, and we don't notice it, and our skin turns over about 30, 35 days. In psoriasis, this happens a lot quicker, about 7 times. And about 4 to 4.5 days, the bottom layer of the skin gets up to the top layer of the skin. And because it does so, it's immature and it's sticky, and that's why we see it as scaly. And because the immune system's involved, it can be often red, it can be often itchy, and it can be often uncomfortable. Now, part of that is genetic. About 1 in 3 people who get psoriasis will have somebody in their immediate family who have it. And our genes don't change throughout our lives. So we have our genes, and then something can happen that can bring this out. And at about half the people, we recognize a trigger. And that can be, particularly in younger people, a sore throat, particularly in children, where your immune system gets upregulated to fight the sore throat, and then as a knock-on effect, it gets more active in the skin. And the problem, once it's triggered in the skin, is it then perpetuates, it self-perpetuates. So even though the sore throat is well gone, the psoriasis and the excess immune activity in the skin continues. Getting a diagnosis with most general practitioners, you know, it's not that difficult to diagnose. And then I think the key in a newly diagnosed person is this sense of hope that this will be managed. It will be managed successfully in almost everybody. And the key is getting the right treatment at the right time so that we can manage that.
Okay, so you're describing there those plaques people might be familiar with, the scaly red patches on the skin, and this is an overactive immune system, and that's the cause of all that. And so that's what people are living with. Do you recognise that, Damien, as like you were diagnosed at 18, and if you take us back to then, what kind of a journey did you go on to get to the diagnosis of psoriasis? Were you exactly as Brian is describing, breaking out in a rash and all that kind of?
Yeah, so like the symptoms of like the red, itchy, scaly, I mean, that's, I'm sure everybody that's been diagnosed with psoriasis probably has that very similar kind of, you know, immediate kind of reaction to that. I went to bed one night and woke up the next morning completely covered. So I didn't have like a small patch on an elbow or a knee. I went to bed with no psoriasis and woke up with all the psoriasis. So my entire front, my entire back was just one big large scale. You could barely see any of my actual normal skin. So I didn't go to school that day. We went straight to the GP, and then he took one look at it and said, you have psoriasis. I was subscribed lots of steroid creams and, you know, had my bout to them and kind of went down. But there was lots of like using like plaques like to descale, so then the steroid creams could do their work. And it was such a huge, you know, impact on my everyday daily life I was coming home from school and taking, or even from work or whatever, and taking my clothes off, and it was like snow falling from my body. My mum would have to get like a tanning mitt and like be there, like sitting there in my underwear, and my mum, like, and I'm like an 18-year-old guy. Last thing I want to be doing is sitting in my living room in my underwear and my mum with a tanning mitt,
yeah,
descaling my back. But yeah, it was such a huge, huge impact. But yeah, like, that was very much what.
And you
we
just
describe it.
You're describing it really well in terms of exactly, you don't want to be sitting there with your mum in your underwear, but not to be too personal, but how does that make you feel? Because you went from everything's normal, everything's grand, I'm 18, I'm out, you know, living my best life, to suddenly you obviously had quite dramatic psoriasis.
Yeah, I mean, when my entire life just essentially got put on hold, has a huge impact on like your personal relationships. Like, if you have a girlfriend, you don't want to be taking your top off. If you're like playing sports, you're worried about taking your, like, you know, your top off, or you're like getting stripped out to change your kit for playing sports. Like, going swimming, any sort of activity that would lead you to expose your skin, you're almost second guessing it all the time. And then if you're someone like...
So you're trying to hide, are you?
You're trying to cover it up. And I think maybe it's like an Irish thing. We're very brazen and we say things how they are. So like, I used to work in retail for quite a while. So I'd get people coming up to me and they'd be like, oh, what's that on your face? Or what's that on your arm? And you're like, oh, it's psoriasis. And they're like, oh, have you tried X, Y, and Z? Have you tried putting tea bags on it or whatever else? And you're just like, well, obviously not. But yeah, so like, I would be quite a very kind of confident kind of guy. I wouldn't have many insecurities. But that was probably one time in my life where... it was like a big reality check.
And you're very young as well.
And I was very, like, very young. Yeah, it's in such an impressionable time in someone's life.
Yeah, completely. Paul, you hear what Damien is saying, and I can imagine the blow to your self-esteem and your confidence at that age, having a situation where you didn't want to take off your clothes in front of other people. So that does have an effect on relationships, but also on activities like sport or swimming or whatever. That must be really hard, Paul, psychologically. And obviously if you're stressed, that can make your psoriasis worse. So you're looking at a chicken and an egg sort of a scenario, aren't you?
Yeah, absolutely. So they're quite the cycle there, you know. And I think, as Damien said, it really does depend on the life stage, or where we're at in our lives when you get a diagnosis like this, is going to be really important. So at that kind of younger point, when we're kind of coming to terms with a body, sometimes a body that we don't like anyway, and then you throw that on top of it and the impact that has, it really, really is very significant. And I think really for people listening today, in terms of kind of first diagnosis or the very early stages, there is without a doubt going to be a period of pretty serious adjustment. And I say that, and also saying, as you said, Kerry, at the beginning, that people are probably doing much better than they've ever done before with psoriasis. So that's important to know. Yeah. But a period of adjustment, you know, and in that kind of no sudden moves, if you like, because this is a time of learning to live with a condition that really does interrupt life in all sorts of ways. And we've got to try and manage that as best we can.
So that you don't let it take over your whole life, kind of thing, because I imagine it almost could. Is that fair, Damien?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it is important to like to try live with it and manage it. It's like, especially when you get to understand what it actually is, and this is not something that can just be, you know, here's a magic pill and psoriasis goes away. So it is kind of coming to terms with like, okay, this is my life now. How do I actually live with this and manage this and, you know, have the best quality of life that I actually can? You know, and like, my psoriasis was extremely severe. Some people it's much more limited. And much more isolated to certain parts of the body. Like, I mean, it's probably, if you have it on your knees, don't wear shorts. Do you know what I mean? But like, I was playing sports and, you know, be quite active. And then, you know, you're at an age where, you know, in your relationships, taking off your clothes is inevitable. And that has such an impact. Do you know what I mean? And then, you know, people are trying to be supportive and being like, oh, it's okay. But, you know, you're just like, you know, almost like reserved, and you're kind of taking a step back. And then, you know, there's that whole like, you know, they don't understand what's actually going on. You know, it's nothing to do with them. It's everything to do with you, as cliche as that is. It's not you, it's me. But often your partner doesn't actually understand that. And they're going to do what any normal human does and be like, is there something wrong with me? Do you know what I mean? And it's, you know, when you're 18, that like the last thing any 18-year-old, especially an 18-year-old boy, does is, you know, open up to somebody,
sure.
You know?
Yeah.
I don't know. I think it is one of those things that it's almost we then can kind of isolate at a point in your life when we need people more than ever at that point of a crisis.
Yeah,
so it has kind of has the opposite effect.
Yeah.
So we kind of pull back from people. And you know, Kira, we know that in facing any sort of crisis in life, health crisis in life, what's most important for people is their social support.
Yeah.
You know, time and time and time again, all of the research says that you talk to anyone who's been through a crisis, how did you get through it? We generally get through these things with the people around us who love us. The difficulty is, in some of these situations, because of, and I hope it's okay to say, sometimes there's a lot of shame that comes up.
Yeah, absolutely.
And shame loves silence.
When you said, like, though, if you're taking off your clothes, like maybe, and you're with a partner or whatever, and they're trying to reassure you that it's okay, that's not the reaction someone wants when they take their clothes off. Oh, it's okay. They yeah, do you know what I mean?
Yeah,
they want, woo,
so.
You know, you want yeah, something yeah, different. And especially when you're young, and I think it might be different if it happened to you a couple of decades later, when you're maybe your confidence is a bit more bulletproof, but it's very hard to overcome your head when you're only 18.
Yeah, I mean,
that
very
must
much
have been
so
difficult. Brian, in terms of the age that it normally presents, is 18 a typical age, or is that a little young? Or
no, it can present at any age, but there's sort of two peaks, late teens, early 20s, and then later sort of 50, 55. But you can get psoriasis at any age. I've seen psoriasis in newborns, and I've seen psoriasis in 87-year-olds for the first time. I think the key, you've touched on some few concepts in this, and I think the key from a medical perspective, and I'm not isolating that from the psychology, because I think they're important and they're done in parallel, and Paul and I have had many of these discussions down through the years, is that you recognise the condition is there, there may be a period of adjustment, but there is good treatment
yeah,
now. This is not what was happening 40 years ago, where treatments really weren't available.
I mean, will you take us, because there's people I know who are watching this today who have just been diagnosed and are thinking, I don't have an appointment with my dermatologist for 18 months.
Yes.
How am I going to get this information? So they're glued to this. So will you take us through a typical treatment pathway, as it were, because there's a kind of a spectrum of treatments.
Yeah, there are. And so if we look purely at medical terms, I mean, things when we see people new who've got newly diagnosed psoriasis is to A, try and, first of all, reassure people. There's a phrase, there's no cure. But we all know there are chronic medical conditions that aren't cured, but people live perfectly normal lives with them. And that's the aim of treatment with psoriasis. So, for example, asthma can't be cured. So essentially, when we see people the first time, are there obvious environmental factors that are making this worse that can be managed? Because this needs a holistic approach to it. Certainly, when you're 18, if you wake up with psoriasis and it's sore and itchy, it's going to have a massive impact on you. And then that feeds in on itself, as you were talking about chicken and egg. So stress can make psoriasis worse. Psoriasis causes stress and you get into this, you know, full-on cycle. And often that leads to us, you know, naturally, particularly in Ireland, we may decide, right, well, we won't go exercise. I won't go to the swimming pool. I'll retreat to the pub. I'll hang out with my mates. They're smoking, I'm smoking. And ironically, those things, unfortunately, change the immune system and make the skin even worse. But so if somebody comes with milder disease, so as you talked about, little patches on the elbows and the knees and the scalp, and then topical steroids, as had been prescribed, are appropriate as long as they work. We don't, you know, when you're covered in psoriasis, you can spend 2 to 3 hours a day looking after your skin. And that's not the aim of treatment in 2022. This is, you know, this has a minimal impact on you, on A, how you live your life, but B, the treatment should have minimal impacts on you as well. And we've got there. It's really just a matter of getting access to that. So milder disease that isn't impacting people hugely. So it's not even just about the amount that you have. If, as you say, if you've two bits in your knees, don't wear shorts. But if you're got it all over your face and you're a 15-year-old and you won't go to school, that's a bigger deal. So we do give a trial of topical treatment for less extensive disease. But nowadays, we are more likely to start giving people medication or ultraviolet light if it's affected them in special sites. And so if you live close to a centre that has ultraviolet light, we will, in Vincent's last time we ordered, we will get people clear over 90% of the time. And then the next challenge is to keep them clear. And then in more people with more severe disease, either resistant to topical treatment. So we give topical treatment for a very fixed time. In the old days, people were sent away. There's no cure for this. Here's some tar, which is pretty mucky, horrible stuff. Good luck. You know, as now we give people topical treatment for a fixed period of time, number of weeks. And then it's either ultraviolet light if that's not working. And if that's not working, then we consider systemic medication. Again, depending how much it impacts upon your life. Because as you said, I've had a guy come in 75, famously when he lived in the north of England. He was a shepherd and he used to live up in the hills for about 6 months of the year and come down in the winter. And his wife threatened to throw him out unless he got his skin fixed. But for 6 months, he didn't care about it because he lived on his own. Whereas, again, if you're a teenager with it on your face or you were a serious soccer player, if this is on your knees and on your elbows, you don't need this stuff. So we now have the tools to be able to control this appropriately.
So you are clearly saying there you tailor the treatment to the person.
Very much individualised, Kieran.
It's about how extensive the disease is, but also how much the disease, depending on its extensiveness, is impacting on them. So a patch on your face as a teenage boy or girl might be much worse than a much more extensive plaque on your back as somebody who is a shepherd, which is an unusual example, but I take your point.
Yeah, well, it sort of highlights it.
It didn't make any difference.
From head to toe. Yeah, it didn't matter to him for 6 months of the year.
Yeah, yeah. Paul, it strikes me, you were talking about the adjustment to the diagnosis and getting your head around it and all of that. There's a bit of an adjustment, not just to the diagnosis, though, isn't there? A bit of an adjustment to treatment, the idea of being dependent on something. People sort of reject the idea that they need to take something regularly, particularly if it's coming in an injectable form, because lots of people are scared of needles, and that's a frightening concept, engaging with hospitals and all of that. Mm-hmm. The treatment itself creates a bit of a psychological burden, doesn't it?
It does, and I think particularly when people have been anticipating an appointment, so you might be on a waiting list for 12 or 18 months and suddenly the appointment is looming. So really important to take very practical steps to prepare for that. And I often say to patients, you know, the doctor that you'll meet actually will have probably heard something very similar to this many, many times, but he or she cannot read your mind. So very often we kind of arrive into an appointment like this thinking, oh, they're going to know this. No, they don't. So really preparing for the initial appointment is really important. And perhaps even bringing someone with you, someone along with you, because there'll be a lot of information. And you know that I think we've all done it. You get out and sit in the car, you're onto the bus and you're going, I never told them about, or I never asked.
That's a really common thing.
So, yeah, just really practically, I think about preparing for that kind of an interaction, and also to say, you know, the dermatologists, the nurses and doctors that I've met over the years, are as a group are very psychologically minded. What does that mean? That I think they're very aware of people's emotional response. The psychological or the emotional burden of this disease, the visibility of it. So they're very tuned into that. So don't hold back.
Yeah.
Because I think so often what happens is that people really end up suffering in silence, that it's just me. And I think Brian would probably say the same thing, you know, it's not just you, whatever might be going on. People will have heard before, so say it out and say it out loud if you can. Prepare for it and bring someone with you. And I think the other thing just to say, because I'm always a little bit cautious about when we talk about emotional life and psychology and any illness, but psoriasis in particular, that people often say to me, my stress has caused this. Right. So I always get a little kind of, oh, be careful talking about stress and psoriasis. Of course, stress is connected to many things in our lives. But we've got to be very careful that we don't end up blaming ourselves for an illness that we've got. So, oh, I didn't take care of myself, or, oh, I've been such a worrier. You've got to watch that one a little bit. Now, of course, we need to learn to take care of ourselves, but not to blame. Does that make a little bit of sense?
Because
I think there can be a lot of that going on.
Oh, there is, right? Yeah. Oh, it's all my own fault because I get stressed too easily. And you just go, well, yeah. We all get stressed. There's nobody lives their lives and that's their stress level. You know,
so are people not using, but their psoriasis is nearly like a further stick to beat themselves with?
Yeah, and this has caused it. And then they'll have heard something. You know, they'll have heard something because there's a lot of misinformation or old wives' tales, for want of a probably un-PC word, to say, you know, oh, that's because he's stressed. Oh, he's got psoriasis, that's because he's stressed. He's, you know, it's because his diet's wrong. It's because he doesn't clean himself. It's various, all of these things. And therefore, there's a lot of that. You'll see this with children with eczema when they come in. It's all mum's fault because it's invariably mum. And it's all because somebody will have told her she had the wrong washing powder or she was feeding the kid the wrong stuff. And it's the same with psoriasis. So very much so, look, we all have stresses in our lives. If you go along like that throughout your entire life, there'd be something very strange and wrong with you. And therefore, it's a matter of recognizing that if you are under more stress, yes, your psoriasis can get worse. Managing, trying to manage that stress and looking after yourself, as Paul says, as much as possible. But also, and again, you hear this from the medical front, but I believe in modern medicine, getting the correct treatment for you so that whatever stresses are going on in your life, that you take psoriasis out of that.
But this is a really important message for people looking at this today. You're not to blame. This is an autoimmune condition.
Yes.
It's a physical manifestation of an autoimmune condition. And yes, you might be stressed, but you know what? There's another 9 out of 10 people who are also stressed who don't have psoriasis.
Yes.
And they could be as stressed or more stressed than you.
Precisely.
But it didn't, that's what we're saying.
Yes.
Probably, I mean, I think it's so important to underline it, you know, because as Brian said, you know, stress has got a really bad reputation. We all need a degree of stress.
So motivates us to get out of bed in the morning.
Completely. It keeps you safe and you're out in the traffic and you're driving a car. When we're right here, we need a degree of stress. Stress has got a really bad reputation. We need it. And I have yet to find a conclusive paper that says, with very valid research, your stress has caused your psoriasis, your illness. So we've got to be very careful about making that kind of a link. And Ciara, it's the most normal thing in the world. Because we, as human beings, we want to know why. Give me some reason for this.
And I really like what you're saying, actually, because I think blame shouldn't be part of this. And I think that's a good thing. But is it fair, Brian, because people do say this, but is it fair to say that sometimes a trigger of a flare-up is a stressful time, a bereavement or a breakup in a relationship, or you change jobs or you move house or you whatever? Are they often triggers? So there is a relationship,
so
though, is there?
Major life events can trigger it, yes. That's not your fault.
No.
You know, that's how your immune system that you've been programmed with reacts to stress, reacts to a major life event, such as a divorce or change of job or a death in the family or big illness. And it can come out. But, you know, if we can find a way to avoid major life events in our lives, I mean, we'd be, you know...
It's pretty boring.
Well, I suppose it would. and the point being is that to take the psoriasis out of that, or to manage the stress, which Paul has been doing a lot of work on down through the years, and specifically for psoriasis, to try and manage that. So to try and break that link between the stressful life event and your skin getting worse, and as well as medical treatment, to use psychological techniques as well, which can benefit. But it's all about, I think, self-compassion is something we've talked about down through the years. It's about less blame. And skin is such an obvious social organ. That's the thing. You know, if I've got diabetes and I'm sitting here, you're not going to know I've got diabetes.
No.
If I've got high blood pressure or I've got kidney problems, you know, for the most part, you're not going to know. If I've got severe psoriasis, you will probably know about it by the end of the day if I'm sitting here uncontrolled. And that's why it is such
but
an important thing in how we socialize
to the
and live.
World. Our face or our mask or whatever it is. And when your mask is wearing the manifestation maybe of a condition, does this resonate with you a lot, Damien, that, God, I remember all that stress? Like, is this, you know, were you treat? I knew you said you went to the GP, and in fairness, the GP instantly said you have psoriasis. But did you then have to go down the route of specialists and dermatology and all that? You went down that road?
No, unfortunately not. So as we were saying earlier on, like if I could go back to that initial, you know, in fairness to the GP, took a one look and said that's psoriasis. Mm-hmm. But And me personally, I think the next sentence out of his mouth should have been, here's a referral to a dermatologist. But it wasn't. It was, here's all this cream and this, you know, plaque and tar.
So he was trying to manage it himself.
It was, rather than send me to maybe someone who was, you know, an actual specialist. And as you said, I probably would have got a treatment plan that was a bit more kind of bespoke to me as an individual.
That we would hope anyway, yeah. But, times have moved on, I hope.
Yeah. Yeah, I think, you know, going back now, I think I would have absolutely loved, you know, like, I think it was such a whirlwind at the time as well. I wasn't, you know, my headspace didn't initially go, okay, well, he didn't tell me to go to a dermatologist, so I'll go myself. He's a doctor. I just trusted him. He said, here's these creams, this shall work. And I just took his word for it because...
He was probably treating it at a certain level, though, as someone who's formerly a GP, you know... we didn't really use the tars as much when I was in practice because that was a bit old school as well. But we certainly would have gone with the topical stuff first of all. So he probably thought he was doing the right thing. But I take your point. Brian, just before we move on to the sort of the next section, for people watching this who, again, are on a waiting list and have psoriasis and are waiting to see someone like you and they know that they can't get to see someone like you for a while, what should they be doing now while they're waiting to manage their condition? And they're sitting there looking at this on their laptop going, yeah, I have these plaques. I have, you know, I'm afraid to take my clothes off. I don't go to the swimming pool. I have a boyfriend, but I don't want to sleep with them because I don't want to take my clothes off. Like they're going through that. What should they do or what can they do for themselves while they wait for the specialist care that's out there?
It shouldn't be years that you have to live with this. And I think this is important, particularly for younger people. And younger people during their formative years, be it during sport, during education, early professional life and relationships. And I think if it is causing that sort of distress that is impacting on your quality of life, is that you should be prioritised to be seen. And if you're waiting 18 months, go back to your GP and say, listen, this is getting worse. Practical things that you can do if the steroid creams, if you've got extensive disease, steroid creams really aren't going to control this. And you're therefore potentially running into issues using lots of topical steroids all the time. So simple things like bland emollients will often take the itch down, so that you're not spending hours a day, but after your shower in the morning and last thing at night. If you smoke, to stop, if you can, to seek help to stop. I think that's very important because stopping smoking on your own, you're five times more likely if you engage with like the quit service, for example, with the HSE. That can have a dramatic effect on it. I think also having a positive outlook to this in terms of I'm not going to live with this forever. This is going to be managed for me. And we're going to find the correct treatment for you so that this is going to be managed for me. I think that's hugely important.
And the vast majority of people, it is well managed?
In 2022, 99% of people will find the right treatment for them so that their skin
is managed.
That's
a brilliant message for people to take away if they take away nothing else. That's a brilliant message.
And I mean, it really is. This is not something that you're going to have to live with on a long-term basis. That specialist care has moved on dramatically in the last 20 years. So that we really, I don't want to put a jinx in this, but I can't think of any of our patients now, and we run a specialist service, where we haven't achieved significant improvement in their disease, if not satisfactory control of their disease, to their satisfaction, not just ours, to their satisfaction, because they're the important people in this. You know, we almost everybody, which is fantastic because I'm old enough to have lived through all of this. So that's the real message, is that the treatments are there to control this, and that this should happen sooner rather than later. That there should be a very planned sort of timeline along this. This is what we're going to do for 8 weeks. Failing that, this is what we're going to do after this. This is what we're going to do.
So it's not loose.
So it's not tight. Go away and there's, inverted commas, no cure, and this is it for the rest of my days.
Can I just ask you, Damien, you have quite a lot of tattoos. I can see quite obvious ones on your neck, on your hands. Was that to do with the psoriasis? Was that you reclaiming control of your skin? Was there a reason for it?
Do you know what? Before this little discussion, I never actually thought of that until you were kind of touching on the psychology end of it. And I think maybe that is a little bit, like I kind of joke off camera there a minute ago, like about almost having like body dysmorphia, almost like picturing myself with a certain amount of tattoo coverage and not really being satisfied. But I think that's an interesting topic, that maybe it is a sense of like, you know, reclaiming I'll have my skin look the way I want it to look and not the way psoriasis, you know, chooses for it
to
look.
You will dictate.
I will dictate how my skin looks. And I never actually thought of that until we've had this discussion. And I think that's probably a fair point that I'm just slowly realising now.
You're going to go away from this going, oh my God.
Yeah. Probably like a psychologist.
Yeah.
I'll keep away from them. I'll chat to you later on.
And with regard to the psoriasis, you know, and sometimes even tattoos to some extent, is there a stigma around having a skin that is different, do you think? And is it an act of defiance, the tattoos, or did you find that there was stigma? Like, you know, you mentioned earlier working in retail, people passing comments on maybe your skin. It's a very personal comment.
Yeah, very much so. I think like there is like a little bit of a stigma there. And that probably stems from just the unknown. It's not really, like so many people actually have psoriasis, but so little people actually know about it. They just see you've got a bit of redness on your skin and that's the extent of their knowledge of it. And that's what they'll pass comments on it and stuff like that. I think the first thing to do would be, I would go to your GP and like that, get whatever advice that he can give you. I would also ask point blank, you know, can I see a dermatologist? I mean, lucky enough, like when I was diagnosed, there probably wasn't as much information out there as there is now. Like, there's probably not a day goes by that I don't get a message on some sort of social media and be like, I have psoriasis so bad. Like, how did you clear up your skin? Blah, blah, blah. And I was like, there's not just the one fixed remedy that goes for everybody. So it's quite tough. But I think, yeah, just talk to people that, there's so many people that have it. Like, the statistics are, they speak for themselves. So it's not something that, you know, you are on your own. So there is a, it's like, community is probably an odd word to say,
yeah,
psoriasis
fair.
Community, but it probably is fair. And we all deal with very similar symptoms, you know, the redness, the itchiness, some more severe than others. So I think there's absolutely no reason why we shouldn't be using every tool at our disposal to make sure that, you know, our lives are, you know, not dictated by, you know, by psoriasis, and that we can live a completely normal life. And psoriasis is just something that just happens in the background.
We have some questions for you, our experts, because we did ask people who have been newly diagnosed what they would like to know and what they would like to hear. They're here. We mentioned this already. Smoking, you're very clear on this, Brian.
Yeah, I mean, smoking is dire for it, unfortunately. It's not something you'd think about, that, you know, you're inhaling tobacco. We know about cancers and we know about heart disease, but smoking changes how the immune system works all over, and specifically in the skin and specifically for psoriasis. So if you smoke, you're about 2.5 times more likely to develop psoriasis in the first place than your twin brother or sister who don't smoke. And the problem then is it tends to make the skin worse by activating the immune system, and treatment responses are less likely in people who smoke. These are people who smoke more than 10 cigarettes a day. So certainly one of the key aspects when we meet people who have been newly diagnosed is to try and help them to stop smoking, because, I mean, smoking is a highly addictive thing. A lot of people got to see us in their sort of mid-30s or late 20s and they started smoking in their teens. So they need help. But it definitely
so
is
it's one of the mainstays it's then of treatment is quitting.
It's trying to quit and trying to help people to quit.
Okay, good stuff. I enjoy a few drinks of the weekend, but I've heard that makes psoriasis work. Do I need to give up?
The answer to that is no, you don't need to give up completely. But certainly all of the research that has been done would suggest if you're drinking 20 drinks a week, which is an unhealthy amount of alcohol to be drinking anyway, that's definitely making your psoriasis worse. If you're 10 drinks a week, it's probably making your psoriasis worse. It depends on who you are, because we all react differently to alcohol at different levels. And it's certainly if you're under 5 drinks a week, it's probably making no difference to whatsoever. So if you drink within the healthy normal limits, then it's probably not doing anything for it. But certainly if your alcohol is excessive, it's almost certainly making it worse. And it's one of the oddities of psoriasis is that it is associated with alcohol. Very few autoimmune diseases are.
Okay. I've been told that I should do yoga and meditation to help my skin. Is there any proof that this works? I might ask you, Paul. I mean, obviously, we always hear yoga and meditation, it will lower your stress levels. But is that good advice?
Look, you know, I'm all
reluctant.
Mindfulness for everything cures everything. It doesn't. You know, it doesn't. It can be beneficial. But I'd really say at this point to people in particular, at a diagnosis in the early stages, look after the basics, your exercise, what you're eating, and try and sleep a little bit. And the time for yoga and meditation will come, I'm sure, and it can be very helpful. The research would say, yes, this can be of benefit. But at this point in someone's kind of pathway, exercise, diet, sleep, and those who take care of us and those who love us, keep them close. The time comes.
You're saying stick to the basics, kind of, aren't you?
I look after the basics.
Someone suggested I should cover my skin with emollient and wrap it in cling film. This is like the old school, the coal tar bandages idea, isn't it?
It's a lot of hassle, and we don't recommend that people use cling film, but just use a simple emollient if you've got itchy plaques while we're looking for definitive treatment. But using the cling film isn't going to make a big difference.
And as you say, it's a lot of hassle.
Yeah.
It becomes very dominant in your life, I'm sure. If I take an antihistamine, will that help the itch?
In general, no. And unless it's one of the sedating antihistamines, and if you're not sleeping, they can be useful. If so, if the skin is itchy and you're not sleeping, taking an antihistamine that'll help you to sleep, not a sleeping tablet, can reduce the itch, but only with sedating antihistamines. So the modern antihistamines that people take for hay fever that don't make you sleepy don't really work for psoriasis itch, unfortunately.
Okay. I've heard medications for psoriasis have a limited lifespan. If this is true, could I eventually run out of options?
Yes, good question. This is with people with severe disease, first of all, and that medications on average, so about 50% of people will get 4 to 5 years out of a biologic and will then lose veterinary to switch. But about 10% of people will stay on their biologic indefinitely. And again, this is people with very severe disease. So every time you switch, you're likely to be in that 10% if you're one of those people with severe disease and needs to switch a lot. But if we now have 11 licensed biologics for the treatment of psoriasis, and we have other traditional systemic agents, if you do the maths on that, that's going to last you quite a long time.
And you can move from one biologic to another.
If one loses effect, you can then move to the other. So
it's not a class effect.
Technically, if you live to 80 years, you'll probably run out of treatments, but hopefully by 80 years from now, there'll be something that, you know, you just take something and it'll all disappear. My point is, it would be very unusual for you to run out of options.
This is an awful question. I saw it earlier. I was asked to leave the swimming pool because of my psoriasis. I was very embarrassed, as you would be, and I haven't been swimming since. Do you have any advice on how I can get over this? I'm not even sure you should be asked to get over it. I mean, that seems very unfair.
It's shocking, isn't it?
Yeah, it's dreadful. It's,
I think an email to the establishment wouldn't go on.
I mean, if that happened to you, would you feel angry? I would feel angry if it was me.
I think anger would be definitely like a fair emotion. I think embarrassment would be the initial. And it's very difficult to be like, oh, well, it's just psoriasis. Again, as I said, like, not many people even are aware of, if they're not dealing with it or know someone who is, they're completely unaware. I think in that, I wouldn't even be like an angry email. It would almost just be like, I was asked to leave your swimming pool because I have psoriasis and I think that's unacceptable. So I think you should educate yourself a little bit better. I mean, it's not contagious. I'm not going to give it to everybody in the swimming pool. I mean, for this person, that's an incredibly tough thing to have to be asked.
Is this the kind of thing that we see happening to patients with psoriasis, Brian?
Yes, less so than we used to. But bad psoriasis used to dominate everything. There were certain professions you weren't allowed into. You weren't allowed to become a nurse, for example, if you had bad psoriasis. I've had people turn down for pilot training, air hostess, because they've had severe psoriasis, and simply because it's deemed that this is an issue in terms of appearance. You do get this. I think the secondary effect, actually, though, is people will read this online or they'll have heard it from a friend, and therefore then they won't go to swimming pool.
Okay.
Yeah, I think really, Kira, I think that's the point, isn't it? That all of a sudden then one's world just gets smaller and smaller and smaller and smaller out of fear of what might happen. Oh, I heard once that something happened like that. So suddenly the things that kind of kept me afloat, the things that keep me well, I'm not doing anymore. And then with that, of course, comes a drop in mood or an increase in anxiety. But I think Damien's point is absolutely, I think you hit the nail on the head. You know, this isn't about you. That's about really bad training on the people who are running or looking after the swimming pool. So this isn't something you need to get over. But actually, this is bad. This is really bad practice.
It's them that need to change. You don't need to change.
Yeah, we spoke about the blame thing. This person should absolutely not be blaming themselves.
What do I say to my friend who has psoriasis and feels too self-conscious about wearing short sleeves, or we were talking about on the knees wearing the shorts? Would you be able to advise somebody on that, Damien?
I think I always find it a little bit difficult to speak on those sort of things because I'm not a very self-conscious person. So I'm probably one of the few people where, you know, it doesn't bother me as much as others. But there was a time in my life where I was very reluctant to take off my clothes. But then, like when I went away on holidays, I kind of got to the point where I'm sitting there and my clothes on and then I'm really warm and I'm actually, you know, contributing to my own suffering.
Yeah.
I'm really itchy and I'm irritated and I'm not comfortable, and it's because I'm allowing this to be. I'm the one that's like causing this, essentially. We talk about blame. That is a physical blame. I'm allowing myself to be uncomfortable here. So I'm just going to take off my t-shirt. And if people want to stare, do you know what? Let them stare. Because it is a normal thing that I have to deal with and lots of other people have to deal with, you know.
But again, as someone who doesn't have psoriasis, seeing these questions, I'm seeing all the limits people are putting on their own lives. Mm. Like, I'm limiting now what I wear, I'm limiting where I go, what I do. I mean, it's pervasive. It's infiltrating all aspects of your social life, of your maybe personal life. The myth-busting section. This is pretty much down to you, Brian. We're going to ask you, psoriasis is contagious.
Well, as Damien said earlier, it's not. So it's a disease of your immune system. It's not an infection, and it's not something you can get from anybody or pass on to anybody.
Good stuff. Nightshade vegetables like tomatoes and peppers are triggers for psoriasis. I have heard patients say this to me. I've eaten tomatoes now and look at me. And I don't know if that's true or not true as such.
Well, the essence is, unfortunately, it's not true. Dietary manipulations don't work either. And there are lots of diets out there. If you are overweight and you lose a lot of weight, your psoriasis can improve. So a lot of the diets that are peddled, for want of a better word, online involve massive changes and massive weight loss. But taking individual bits out of your diet or adding bits in make no difference, unfortunately. I wish it was that easy. Mm. And certainly eating things like tomatoes and peppers and these sort of query pro-inflammatory foods or anti-inflammatory foods really make no difference to this whatsoever.
Psoriasis is always worse in the winter?
About 90% of people's psoriasis gets better with sunshine. And sunshine, specifically the bits of sunshine that help, are called UVB. And we get UVB in Ireland really from sort of sunny days beyond April. And certainly some people will notice when they're not getting UVB that their psoriasis is worse in winter. The flip side of that is about 5% of people where sunshine makes it worse. So it's not always worse in winter, but some people do recognise this.
Okay. If you use a sunbed, you can clear your psoriasis.
So the answer to this is, yes, you can clear your psoriasis, but at a cost. So the ultraviolet light that we use is called narrowband UVB, and it's very much targeted deliberately to try and treat psoriasis. And what we use looks like a sunbed. So it's a natural sunshine works. Went up to see your man in Vincent's and he gave me ultraviolet light. It looked like a sunbed. I'll go, I'll have better access. Sunbeds use long wave UVA and huge doses of it. And that is pretty useless at clearing psoriasis unless you do lots of it. But high dose UVA is a brilliant way of giving you cancer. So you might get a little bit of an improvement in your psoriasis and you're increasing your risk of skin cancer off the scale. So
this is not
this is
a
not.
Good idea.
Please, if you feel you need to use sunbeds, come and see somebody who will treat you properly.
Okay. You need to add some fish oils to your diet.
The answer for psoriasis, no. So just to go back, and there are lots of these fish oil supplements don't make any difference to psoriasis whatsoever. As a kind of something that makes me smile, there's one study where we get academic about this that show if you take massive doses of fish oils, you can improve your psoriasis by 10%. And at that level, people smelled of fish. And they said, you know what, I'd rather the 10% of psoriasis back. I mean, this is massive doses of the stuff. So ordinary fish oil supplements make no difference to your psoriasis. Please don't waste your time and money. I know. Imagine, my skin's clear, but people...
Getting rid of the scales, but then adding the smell.
Yes, yeah.
Always apply steroid creams very sparingly. Now people will ask this question a lot because they cause your skin to get paper thin.
And I think this is a really important question. Part of this comes from when you read the leaflet, it says sparingly. It doesn't tell you what sparingly means. Is sparingly one glass of wine, sparingly a bottle of wine? I mean, I drink sparingly. So there is fingertip units for topical steroids. There's YouTube videos of people that can use this safely and appropriately.
So that's another good resource for people to go to. My friend went for acupuncture and his skin cleared up after a few sessions.
There is randomised control evidence, believe it or not, show it doesn't work. So if you get better, that's great because it's probably a placebo effect or your psoriasis is going to get better anyway, which can happen sometimes in people, particularly with milder disease. But as a route of treatment, it doesn't work for the majority of people and it's expensive. And I would say for all of these sort of, maybe people say complementary medicine, if it's harmless and it's free, give it a go. But if you're paying money for it, you want to know that this is going to work. And almost all of these have been tried and they don't.
It's an allergy to dairy products. I know so many people who will cut out dairy for all kinds of skin conditions, to be honest.
Yeah. And clearly, psoriasis, just to be absolutely honest, has nothing to do with dairy products. So you can live on milk and cheese and cream and you have the same psoriasis as people who completely avoid them. It makes absolutely no difference to it. And again, when people ask me this question, it's let's try and focus on things that we know do work, either in the medical space or lifestyle changes or meditation or looking after yourself. And let's stay away from things that we know definitely don't work. I wish it was that easy. It'd be great.
I'm afraid that's all we have time for on today's first episode in the series Beyond Expectations. So let's talk psoriasis. My sincere thanks to Damien, Paul and Brian for what has been a really illuminating conversation. And I know what I will take away today is that line that you gave, Brian, that 99% of people will have good control of their psoriasis. So they'll get beyond it. And I think that's really helpful. We'd love to know what you think, though. Please do join the conversation online using the hashtag So Let's Talk Psoriasis, and it's so is spelled PSO, because we'd love to get your views and your feedback on all of this. This is the first episode out of four in this series. The next episode will be on living with psoriasis. We'll be talking to Sarah Hanrahan, a beauty and lifestyle blogger, and she'll be talking about living with psoriasis. We'll be talking to Professor Katrina Ryan, who's a consultant dermatologist, and Celine Daly, advanced nurse practitioner, about the effects psoriasis have in terms of your life, your career, pregnancy, and all the different ways you can manage it. Please do join us for that as well. We hope you have enjoyed it as much as we have here. I'm Dr. Ciara Kelly, and you're very welcome to the series Beyond Expectations. So let's talk psoriasis.
The views, information, or opinions expressed during the So Let's Talk Psoriasis podcast and video series are solely those of the individuals involved and do not represent those of Janssen Sciences Ireland UC. The primary purpose of this series is to educate and inform and is not a substitute for professional diagnosis or treatment. This series is supported by funding from Janssen Sciences Ireland UC.